Welcome to the 95th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome to my podcast. It's a great time of year to live in Florida. We're now having weather in the mornings in the low 60s and in the daytime in the 80s. It's a little dry for my garden, but nothing a hose won't fix. So life is good here in Florida. Welcome to the podcast. Update on me, I guess, as far as a training in my endurance athletic background. I'm just training for marathons and running events for the next several months. I have a marathon in December in California, then a half marathon in Florida, and then a whole marathon again in Miami in the first of the year, and I've signed up for my first ultra in Mendocino, California with Sid Garza Hildman, and that's in April, so that'll be my first ultra marathon. It'll be somewhat of a challenge, given that I live in completely flat Florida and I don't run trails, and I'm signed up for a trail ultra marathon, so training things are going to have to change. There are some places in Florida that I can find some hills, I can do some bridges. There are some areas in Florida where you can find some hills and roads to run on. I can always run in the beach. I guess I can do some stadium stairs running at the local high school. I guess that'll give me some hills and some weight. So that may have to be my compromise on training, but it'll be a fun event. It's a beautiful countryside out there, so I look forward to getting there. But, up first is my road marathon in California. So that's what I've been training for. I'm trying to ramp up my mileage coming off the Ironman. So I think I did close to 40 miles last week in the high 30s. And that'll be I think I'll break into the 40s this week. I try to run harder days on Tuesday and Thursday, and the rest of the days easy. I took Monday off. I'm just feeling a little tired. I'm trying to listen to my body and not push it too much, but I also feel much better when I do something. I haven't got back into swimming yet since the Ironman. I need to do that. Just, again, trying to focus on getting my mileage up a little bit, running first. I am paying a lot of attention to stretching and foam rolling and mobility with my feet and lower legs. And so I think that's real important. As many of you know, I'm involved in this push-up challenge. It started for the troops, 22 for 22 days, and now I'm up to 58 days and 30 push-ups. I put those out on Facebook just as a I did it reminder. It's kind of silly, but I do get some feedback that it's encouraging some people to try, and I hope that it does. You're never too old to start doing push-ups or start doing mobility exercises. I'm also a huge fan in planks. If you haven't done those, look them up, but they're a great exercise for your whole body as far as your core and your back and your shoulders. So I think that's a really good thing to incorporate. There's a motorcycle outside. I don't know if you can hear that. But anyway, I think that the mobility and, if you yoga is also a good thing that I try to do a couple days a week. It just is very relaxing. Again, helps with the stretching and some strength training. So that's where I am as far as my training goes. In the backyard, there's a garden. It's a little bit slow right now. I have Swiss chard and beets starting to come up. The tomatoes are there, but they're not doing anything too exciting. Tonight, sweet potatoes are on my menu from the garden. We had microgreens from the garden last week. I have a jicama to pick for this weekend or to harvest. We've been canning okra and peppers and drying peppers. So that's all really, really good. Hopefully we'll have some beans here in the future. So the idea is to get as much from the backyard as we possibly can. Fruit trees are dormant at this time of the year, so we're just keeping them nourished in hopes that we'll get a good fruit harvest next year. As far as the fruit I've been eating, Again, persimmon season has been in full swing. It's apple season, so I'm trying to eat local apples. I did have my first papaya off of a tree, so papayas are in season down here. The other thing that I've discovered and fallen in love with is dragon fruit. And if you haven't had them, try. They're red and kind of ugly on the outside. They can be white or red on the inside. You can make a nice smoothie with them. I've been doing a papaya bowl, with the dragon fruit bowl, where I just do the dragon fruit and ice and do that in the Vitamix and then add some other fruit on top, whole fruit, kind of to make a very hot pink looking sundae. So that's a kind of a fun fruit to eat. We always try to have a big fruit bowl on Sunday morning as well, but I eat fruit every day, mostly to lunch. Is kind of my rule. I've also, this is fall season, so pumpkin, everything is in vogue right now. So I do pumpkin and oats, kind of a pumpkin pie oatmeal breakfast on occasion. So pumpkin, oats, raisins, dates, pumpkin seeds, walnuts. So that's a really good breakfast as well. Pumpkin pancakes, again, without any eggs or oil. We make those just with some baking soda and flaxseed, and that works out really good. And pumpkin and almond milk, obviously. So, try to eat for the season, basically. This was week 4 of my nutrition class. It's a 6-session class. So I brought in baked tofu because tofu is a scary thing for people. People have preconceived notions of what tofu might be, or that it's this bland, milky-looking substance that only hippies eat. So I did a cornmeal panko breadcrumb and spiced encrusted tofu, and I baked that and brought it in. Everybody liked it. One of the students really liked a poppy seed dressing that was in the local grocery store on the tour, so I made the poppy seed dressing with poppy seeds, orange juice, mustard, apple cider vinegar, and water, and a little pepper, and a little agave, and that turned out really good to the point where I'm going to make it for myself now. I kind of really like that dressing. I served it over spinach. I also did my sunflower meatballs, and that's with soaked sunflower seeds and brown rice and seasonings that you would just expect to find in meatballs, and those turned out really good, and served them over a little bit of homemade marinara sauce that had mushrooms and basil and oregano in it. So that went over good. The class talked about basically what we had seen in the grocery store, because I had some feedback that even though we spend an hour and a half in the grocery store going through things, it kind of flew by, and they weren't sure exactly what happened. So I kind of made a cheat sheet about what we had seen, and we kind of discussed it. So I think that worked out pretty good. Every class is different as far as where they are. Sometimes people come just for the support and they're already plant-based. But more often than not, people know nothing about whole food plant-based nutrition and they're starting from scratch. Sometimes I pressure people more so than they've actually inquired about it. And this time I've actually have some people that I kind of pressured into coming just because they're doing so poorly with regard to their health. And so progress is a little slower. So the first person that, I would say the person that I pressured the most into coming as of this week actually walked into a vegetable produce store and looked around. I'm not sure what she got. I'm not sure exactly what she made, but she was there looking at the vegetables. I still think it's fairly overwhelming for her. But again, she is liking what she tastes in class, so it's not quite as much of a challenge. I think the challenge with her is more social, and so that are things that we need to work on addressing and give people the confidence that they can be in a social situation and still be plant-based and still be independent, but they can maintain that social situation, because I think that's very important. People aren't going to get up, give up their social ties, and I don't expect them to. But you have to be able to live within, you know, the world we live in that's mostly not plant-based. So you need to maintain the social ties, and there needs to be a communication enough that, you know, you're willing to discuss it and ask that people support you. The person who liked the poppy seed dressing actually made some of the recipes that we're handing out, so that was really good. We made progress there, and then we have another person that's 100% plant-based, or 100% plant-based couple. And I think that's really great in a class. If I can have somebody that's really on board and they talk about what they make, and it brings it to a level in the class that it's like, hey, if they can do it, I can do it, or it sounds good, or it's not that difficult. Because there are people from all walks of life and all backgrounds in the class, so I think it's important to see that, you know, you don't have to be of you don't have to look a particular way to be plant-based. You know, you can, you can be a hippie, but you can be a business person. You can be anything and still be plant-based, and you can still find ways to do it. And I think the more variety and the diversity that people see, the more likely that they're going to be okay with trying it. The other person in the class, another person in the class has lost 6 pounds, and the biggest thing there is they're transitioning from 1% milk, 3 gallons a week, if you can believe it, to almond milk. So, I mean, that's a huge success right then and there. This person actually is a pretty good cook, it seems like. Lots of good ideas, and despite him thinking that he didn't remember much from the shopping trip, he remembered quite a bit. Is very engaged and is really, I think, going to be a very successful in converting to being in his plant-based journey. He's really getting the hang of it, and he's certainly becoming more accepting. Had someone that's followed up from an older class that came in. We do drop-ins. People can come back to class for a small, a small ticket fee, so to speak. Drop in for $5 a piece, just to help with the cost of the food, and that way I keep a head count of who's going to be there. But I think it's important that, you know, if he kind of fell off the wagon, was traveling for 3 months, his wife is not on board completely. She does make some meals for him, but it's been difficult, and he's fallen off the wagon. So the fact that he came back, I think, is a huge step, just kind of to get back into the scene of things. So I was really happy to see them. A week ago, I was at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine conference, and I was really excited to go. It was billed as a lot of things as far as how to make your practice more of a lifestyle medicine practice, how to make it work. There were pretty close to 600 healthcare providers there. About half were physicians. And certainly the physicians that were there were very much interested in making lifestyle medicine a part of their practice. And when I say lifestyle medicine, I'm talking about these diseases that are lifestyle diseases. So diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, cancer, autoimmune diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, and Crohn's. These are all diseases that are very much affected by lifestyle. And so, you know, practitioners, whether they're family practitioners, internists, GI docs, cardiologists, physical therapy doctors, even neurologists can benefit and make that part of their practice. And there were their people there. There were also psychiatrists and psychologists and dietitians, nurse practitioners. So I think everybody's struggling with how to make this work into their practice because the American model of medicine is not really set up to do it at this point. And I got the feeling coming away that people still aren't quite sure how to make it work. There were some posters on doing some group visits The reality of it is there's not a financial incentive or even a financial supportive incentive, you know, to make this work at this point. So when people incorporate, when doctors incorporate lifestyle medicine into their practices, it has to be, you know, it's purely that they just want to help and they realize that lifestyle medicine is, it's very important, and nutrition and exercise and community is very important, and that's what they want to do. And, you know, I kind of got the sense, just like I did a few weeks ago with my medical student, that, you know, if we can just educate physicians to be supportive of a whole food plant-based lifestyle and recommend it, and then have some resources available, that would certainly be a step forward than this mixed approach that we get that, you know, nobody talks about it. Because I think if you can just connect the dots that nutrition is and movement is very important in the prevention or treatment of these diseases, then we're a big step ahead. And so again, you know, to take the elephant out of the room, so to speak, and talk about it, that, you know, this is just not something that, you know, you contracted. It's something that you were actively involved in having happen to you. And you can also actively fix yourself from it. So, you know, perhaps with more and more of these conferences, people, you know, again, doctors will at least start to discuss this, have books available. You know, I still think there's a way to incorporate nutrition classes in every practice, and that would be, you know, what I would like to see. So I've actually signed up for some committees to maybe help steer some of that in the future, and so we'll see where that goes. But, you know, the howl of becoming plant-based and changing, you know, your ways after, you know, however many years is still very difficult. You know, and I think that, you know, it's kind of a three-pronged approach. You know, there's the nutritional aspect of it, there's the exercise component of lifestyle diseases, and there's also the community or family component of lifestyle disease or lifestyle change. And then if you take that down a little bit further, I think it comes down to two really big things that I run into over and over again when I talk to people, and it's the time to make the switch and the desire. And when I say desire, I'm going to actually turn that around to being a team. In my office, one of the sayings we have is, you know, travel with the team, eat with the team. And, you know, I guess for whatever reason, you know, it's always been because of my selfish ideas that's kind of come into play. So whether I'm training for a marathon and raising money for Wounded Warriors, then my office kind of gets behind it and travels with the team, and we all do what we need to do. Whether it's this nutrition class, you know, my staff has got behind me, and whether we do the yearly events, they get behind and do it. So maybe not something that they totally agree with at first, but they get behind. You know, even through the years when I was coaching my daughter's various teams, you know, we made it work within the schedule. So the whole practice and the family of my patients practice, you know, what goes on with the team, we kind of rally around and make it work. And I think everybody wants to be on a team of some sort, whether you're athletic or not. We all want to belong. We all want to be a part of something. We'd like to be a part of something that's a popular thing because, again, you know, we all have the need to be the popular kids. But, you know, if you're not going to be the popular kids, I kind of grew up on a team that was always the underdog. And, you know, you can get a lot of strength from being the underdog as well. You know, I'm from West Virginia, and, you know, there's nobody in this room right now except Samantha, my dog. But, you know, there's West Virginia jokes come to mind all over the place, you know, when I was growing up. And, you know, then I was West Virginia University and the Mountaineers, and our teams haven't always been the best or the most successful teams in history. We actually have a good football team this year, and our basketball team is pretty good. We're, you know, we do okay. We have an excellent soccer team, and our rifle team, just to diverge, we won Olympic medals. So, you know, go Mountaineers. But, you know, it's always been a bit of an underdog. It was a wonderful school to go to, but not too many people know about it unless you're from that area. But if you are from that area and you go to that area, you'll see that people wear gold and blue all the time. And it's almost like the state colors. It's the university colors. But it really, there's so many people that wear gold and blue, and they're so proud of the university and so, you know, so happy to be a part of it and want to be a part of it that there's gold and blue everywhere. And because they want to be part of the team. And I think it's the same way with plant-based nutrition or becoming plant-based or being vegan. You want to be part of a team, but it's a really small team. You know, it's somewhere around, you know, 1%. And it's becoming more, and there's certainly, you know, more accepted and more people know of it, but it's certainly not something that people are flooding to at any huge rapid rate. So it makes it a little bit difficult, and because it's so small, people have doubts that it actually works, or it's too hard, or why aren't more people because being part of the team? And I think it's more because it's just like, you know, good old West Virginia. It's a well-kept secret. You know, we people that are plant-based, you know, they maybe there's not enough. You know, we don't get enough publicity. Because there's so much publicity in the other way as far as the marketing, because, again, there's not a whole lot of money to be made in this field. You know, there's not a whole lot of money to be made off of health. And, you know, if you're not in the soybean and corn or animal agricultural product, there's not a lot to make in growing of the other vegetables. I guess there is and there isn't. You know, there's not a lot of subsidies, but... You know, there are more and more entrepreneurs that are doing things around plant-based and vegan agriculture. You know, there's certainly more and more products on the market that are plant-based, animal-free, animal cruelty, even in the makeup industry, in the shoe industry, in the clothing industry. So, you know, there's more and more around, but people want to be part of a team and you like to be part of, you know, again, the more winning team, you know, it's a sense of belonging. And I think, you know, it's just, we need to celebrate the people that are on our team, and make sure people know about it. It's kind of funny. Recently, we just had the World Series, finished night before last, and you know, it was the Cubs who haven't won a game or who haven't won the World Series for I think 103 years versus the Indians, who, you know, again, were underdog teams. So we had two underdog teams playing, and people were rallying behind them, and you know, everybody had their Cubs hats on and their Indians hats on, and people were very proud to wear their baseball shirts, you know, and it was fun to see, and people had a lot of fun, you know, watching. And you know, I'm a Pirates fan, you know, from way back when I was small, but certainly not a big baseball fan. But I tuned in the last game because I wanted to see what was happening, and you know, you kind of want to be part of a team. Same way on Sundays, you know, you go to the grocery store, people are wearing their football jerseys because they want to be part of a team. So you know, maybe we should have. You know, more people wearing their plant-based shirts. You know, we certainly have plant-based shirts here. Jamie Delaney, Heartbeats on Plants t-shirts. Rich Roll has a t-shirt. No Meat Athlete has a t-shirt. So, you know, the Vegan Society has a t-shirt. There's Humane Cruelty Free has t-shirts. So, you know, grab a t-shirt and wear it. And nothing else, you can strike up a conversation. It's always fun to wear, you know, a team out on Sunday to the grocery store or wherever you're doing your chores. And, you know, as far as that goes, since it is football season and we're getting into the heat of things, maybe consider a plant-based tailgate party. You know, that's typically you see the people with their grills and, you know, all this meat on the grill for the tailgate parties. But, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking that, you know, it'd be pretty easy to have a plant-based tailgate party. You know, you can have a vegan pizza, just hold the cheese and hold the meat, and you have lots of veggies. You can make that into small pieces, so it's kind of more individual slices. We did a cheese ball this weekend that looked like a spider. I posted it on Instagram. It was made out of cashews and sun-dried tomatoes, about 50-50. So and some nutritional yeast, and it really tasted good. You can, you know, use pretzel to dip in, or you can make, I made some homemade crackers this week with flaxseed and bell pepper and sunflower seeds, so they turned out really good and made them spicy. So you can control the oil in them if you make those. But again, just pretzels work, you know, for your tailgate party. I would certainly serve the crunchy tofu that I made at a tailgate party. It was really good and in bite size, and it was, you know, had a little kick to it. I got that recipe from One Green Planet that typically has a lot of good ideas. We do small potatoes and dip them in barbecue sauce. You could have the various sauces to dip the little baby potatoes in. Certainly, there's always hummus with veggies to dip in. You can do black bean burger sliders. You can even have a burger party with, you know, various bean burgers, quinoa burgers, beet burgers, sunflower seed burgers. So, I mean, you could even have your friends, you know, and do a different burger off at your tailgate party. You can easily make spinach artichoke dip plant-based and actually low oil by using tofu. Have some pumpernickel bread or whole bread or Ezekiel bread to dip in it. So, I mean, you could really do a tailgate party up good and invite people. And you don't have to tell them it's a vegan tailgate unless you're inviting other people that are plant-based already. But it certainly would showcase that it's okay to be on the plant-based team. So, I think that's a... maybe a good idea. And if anybody does that and takes a picture, I'd love to post it on my website. So go ahead and do that and send it in. Maybe I'll do it as well. I think we need to, again, showcase a lot of our vegan athletes. Stereotypically, people are pasty, and skinny. That's what people think that a vegan is. So they don't want to be part of that team. Personally, I know cyclists, I've interviewed Ian Kramer on my podcast, ultra runners, Josh LaJohnny's an amateur ultra runner, but certainly we have Scott Jurek. A lot of ultra runners are plant-based. We had the American Olympic weightlifter was plant-based. We have some triathletes that are plant-based, football players, tennis players, former ice hockey players that are plant-based. My son-in-law, the strength and conditioning basketball coach, is plant-based. There are other trainers that are plant-based and coaches that are plant-based. So, I mean, they're around. It's just recognizing them and, people need to know that you can do all these things and be strong and be competitive and be plant-based. So it's cool to be on the plant-based team. So, I think, you need to know that you have that team and you can reference those people if you need to justify, if you're asked, why are you doing this or aren't you afraid of being healthy? But the biggest team of all is the household team. I think that comes down to communications with the people in your house. I don't really get the divided house. Certainly in my class, we talk about the divided house and how to, kind of deal with it and get around it and support each other. And, there's certainly websites to go to and forums on the internet and vegan meetups to go to. But, the household, to me, should be the biggest team that you're on. And I really don't understand the divided nutrition household, because I think it's something worth sitting down and communicating with the people in your house about what it is that that you want to do if you are converting to being whole food plant-based, and why exactly are you doing it. I think that excuses like I like meat or I like cheese, it's just really not good enough to be disruptive to the major team of your being, is that the team of your household. I don't think that meat should trump or be win over that the spouse. I don't think that health you know, should be, that meat and dairy should be secondary to health. You know, I mean, health should win out over everything as far as in your household. There's nothing more important than to have everybody in your home healthy. And anybody that's had a loved one that they care for in their house that is unhealthy, they will do anything they can to get that person healthy. There's numerous doctor's trips, there's medications, you know, people are trying to figure out what they can cook to get this person back on their feet. It takes a lot of time and energy to run back and forth to the hospital. So, I mean, health trumps everything. And I also think that there should be some loyalty that, you know, takes precedence over food preferences. You know, so you have a loyalty to the people in your house. So, you know, what is this exactly that we're going to embark on? And, you know, let's discuss, you know, meat and dairy and the rationale for eating this versus a whole food plant-based diet. Is this something we need? You know, is this something if, you know, in 5 years there's a sustainable, you know, meat that, you know, doesn't harm animals or the environment, and we can switch back, and, you know, maybe you can discuss it at that time. But at this point, you know, and you want to do a whole food plant-based diet for your health, your environment, for the animals, I think that needs to be discussed. And you should be able to come to some agreement that, you know, we're going to do this as a family. You know, travel with a team, eat with a team. And at least inside the house, under the roof, I think it should be united. Even if it starts with a trial to see how it goes. You know, I know people that are doing a 6 week on, 6 week off to try to transition into a whole food plant-based diet. I really, you know, I guess I'm a Nazi parent, but I really don't think that children should have a big vote into this determining nutrition. They don't have any education in what should be good for them. And it's your job as a parent under their roof to guide them, bring them up to be good people, and bring them up to be healthy people. So they may be picky eaters. There are some kids that eat everything, and there's some kids that don't want to eat anything. I think you can work around that. There's always plant-based foods that children eat. So you work around that. But caving in to hot dogs and hamburgers and chicken nuggets is really not doing anybody any favors.
So educate the kids, you know, talk about the planet, talk about the animals, where the food actually comes from, and, you know, have them help make it. They can help plan the menus and, you know, make some rules around tasting things. But certainly, you know, again, the most important thing I can stress is eating as a family. And I think talk about this team concept, you know, it's a family team. You know, everything that you do reflects on your team. And actually, you know, being unhealthy is a reflection of your family team. If you look at families, you know, a lot of people are shaped alike. You know, I can look back at my dad's side of the family and, you know, they all had the same body habitus, and a lot of people were overweight. And it's because they ate the same things. So, you know, and you look at a lot of families that are like that. You know, just walk up and down the grocery store aisle, go to a soccer game. You know, you can see families are shaped alike because of what they eat. Now, you know, some kids are just, you know, really active and thin. But, you know, I think it's really sad when one kid may have a little bit of a different metabolism, whether it be secondary to gut microbes or, you know, perhaps a small eating disorder, or there's some other family dynamic. But if everybody's eating a healthy plant-based diet, there's much less chance that there's going to be one child that's really, really overweight compared to the other one. So, you know, I think it helps everybody. And, it, you know, the education on, you know, what is good and limiting simple sugars in kids' diet and limiting refined foods and processed foods. We all can find time to do things we want to do, so make time for what matters. And I think sitting down in your own home, having a meal together is a great thing and should be a priority in most households, and would, you know, fix a lot of things that are wrong with people that have trouble in their families. You're nourishing the body, nourishing the mind, connecting and communicate with the people around your table is a really, really good thing. Talk about the food that you're eating. Talk about the environment. Talk about what happened in the days. I think that's really part of this whole thing as far as community and family and staying on the course. being healthy. Fast food is not something we need. It's a myth that's been created by marketers to convince people that we don't have time to cook and that we don't want to cook and we just need to pick things up. We do have time. By the time you spend driving to a restaurant, grabbing something, coming home, or sitting in a restaurant waiting for service, getting food of poor quality often, you could have made something great at home and actually connect it with your family. If kids are playing sports or, somebody's golfing or you have gym time, you know that's going to happen. So fit dinner around that schedule. And if it's too difficult to fit dinner around that schedule, then maybe that activity needs to be postponed or limited so that you can schedule a family time and family dinner and making good food. And, you need to actually look at it. Look at the month. Look at maybe break it down to the week. Get a calendar and plan ahead. If you know you have a late soccer practice on so many days, then let's do the easier meals that day perhaps. So we'll do a pot of soup, or maybe we'll do leftovers that night. But still you have control over what you're eating, so I think it's a really good idea to sit down as a family or sit down with your spouse or yourself and plan things out. People will eat the same thing, burgers and fries, chicken nuggets and fries, Subway sandwiches or some sort of sub sandwich, pizza, wings, over and over, that same process. So it doesn't have to be a hugely creative meal. It can be a fairly simple, potatoes and beans, corn, a portobello mushroom sandwich. It doesn't have to be elaborate. Save the elaborate meals for the weekends or save it when you have a little bit more time. And I also think that, we need to, as a society, incorporate movement daily into our activity. So, it may need to be planned. Typically, I like to exercise in the morning. It's a great way to see the sun come up. It's very peaceful. Most people have time at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning to get out and get something done. It may be going to bed a little bit earlier. But I think it's worth it to, get your exercise in. It clears your head. You get fresh air. Or maybe it's going to be after work, and you're going to, but you're going to budget that time in every day, that this is the time that I need for exercise. If you have a family and they're at practice or swimming practice, certainly you can exercise during that. If they've got a game, then it may not be that day. You may have to go early before game. But, it can work around if you, again, make it a priority and schedule things. So that's kind of my take on the team. But I really, like the team concept. And, I think we need to make a bigger team and be inclusive in the team no matter where people are. So if you're, again, this plant-based team, it can be the no-oil team, the oil team, the unhealthy vegan team. I think we need to all come together. But when you're doing this for health reasons, to get the most out of it, you have to have whole foods as a center of your main menu. Another thing you can do is to log your activities onto a website, Strava, which is an app that people can track and support each other, or Garmin Connect, or within your family, Garmin has a way to do competition. So does Fitbit. I think those are a good things. Fitness trackers, and to document, at least document and keep a log of your activities in a calendar. I typically just have a calendar upstairs in my room, and I document what I've done every day just so I can look back and see where I am as far as my training goes and what I might want to change or do differently or what happened around something that I could perhaps improve on. And if you're struggling with your diet, I also think that it's extremely important to have a diary right beside in your kitchen so that you can write down anything you eat. So even just a small little notebook so you can document every little thing you eat, because when you look back on it, you'll realize just what you may have grabbed, you know, out of the refrigerator, or grabbed in a hurry, or grabbed fast food, or grabbed at the service station. You just need to have that little book with you all the time so you can document it. It's not to punish yourself. It's just to be able to realize and become aware of what you're actually eating if you're having difficulty losing weight. I had a patient this week that, you know, we had talked about numerous times when he's been in the office, and he's not losing any weight, and he's just being completely strict and eating salads. And finally, you know, we had that very difficult conversation, you know, when I have to say, you know, if I were to lock you in this room and, you know, we did a water fast, then you'd realize that you would lose weight. You agree? And he said, yes. And it's like, so there's got to be something that, you know, is getting in the way, whether you occasionally go out. You know, so some people will do really good at home, but when they go out, they just really overeat, and that causes a problem. Or some people have, you know, when they come home from work and they're really hungry and they open the refrigerator door, but they grab something really bad, or they get in late and they're waiting for dinner and they grab something. I know, you know, I'm bad about if I've missed, you know, if I'm really hungry and I start eating late, then, you know, I have to become aware of when to cut it off, or I'll just keep going back for more and more and more of something. So you need to, you know, it helps really to have the diary so you can log all this. So this particular patient finds, like, well, I know what it is. And he says, cheese. I put cheese on everything. And, you know, we start looking, it's like, well, that is it. You know, it adds tremendous amount of, you know, calories and oil and salt to your diet. And that's really what's causing a lot of your problem. And, you know, and I was happy that he finally came to that realization that he found out what it was. And it's like, so now you can be aware of it. Now when you start to grab it, you can think about it. And, you know, you can start to figure out how to limit it or how to do alternatives. And we talked about, you know, alternatives. I still think that, you know, a cashew cheese put on something, or the butternut squash cheese, you know, is a better way to go. So we talked about, you know, if you save your nuts that you're going to eat, your 2 ounces of nuts today is in a condiment, whether you make that into a salad dressing or you make that into some of a cheese sauce, it's certainly better than using the cheese that's a dairy cheese or a processed vegan cheese that's just full of oil. And very calorie dense. So, you know, I think we made progress there, and it made him hopeful, because now he understands that there is a reason for it. It wasn't that he was doing everything right and it just wasn't working for him. It was that, you know, these things were sneaking into his diet. This cheese was sneaking into his diet so much that it was just sabotaging anything that he made going forward. So the diary will help you to kind of look and see, you know, what exactly you're sticking in your mouth and what could be the problem. And if nothing else, it can just track how many times you actually go out and the potential savings for eating in. So, you know, I encourage you to give that a shot this week. If you have any questions for me, email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Also my website, drdelaney.com. If you're in the area, we do the 6-week nutrition courses. I'd love to have you. The other thing is that we're going to do our January 21st day-long nutrition event with Dr. Michael Clapper and Timmery Hagerberger, so we'll look forward to that. Let me know how you're doing on your training. Let me know if you do any tailgate party with plant-based nutrition. I'd love to hear for how you're getting along. And until next week, you know, try to do a little better than you did last week and make your nutrition and your family and your exercise a priority, and you'll feel better for it.